Well, good afternoon. This is actually Thursday, October 14th, at about 4 o'clock p.m. Because I won't be here at my house this weekend. My wife is treating me to a small 2-day getaway. And so I won't be here on Sunday. That doesn't mean I won't sit down and meditate at 11 o'clock, because I will. But this talk I had to prepare in advance. So we're studying this wonderful book, A Parenthesis in Eternity. We're on chapter 30, God Made This World for Men and Women. And we only have, I believe, 3 more chapters, and then we have concluded this study. Now, the first sentence in this chapter says, "Man is a prisoner of his mind." And we have been told that the human mind is, well, Herb calls it the world mind. And so does Joel. In his book, The Art of Spiritual Healing, in the chapter, What Did Hinder You?, towards the end, he talks about when the human mind is no longer speaking, no longer functioning, then the world mind is no longer functioning, because they're one and the same. And we, Joel says, are prisoners held captive by this mind. And actually it's quite able to hypnotize us, isn't it? Oh, I don't mean it'll hypnotize you into stealing a diamond ring. However, it may very well hypnotize you into placing a little $10 or $20 bet, and then placing another one and another one. We had a lady that lived in this area of the world. She used to cut hair. I don't know where she is, but she had a beauty salon. I don't know where she is now. I don't even remember her name. But we also have a casino nearby, because the Cherokee tribe is just about 30 minutes away from here. And they have the big casino. This lady, she made a bet, and she won. I mean, she won like $10,000. And that was all it took. When last we saw her, she was still there at the casino betting. She had lost her business. She had lost her house. I think she lost a relationship, too. I don't know. But she was still convinced and driving. This thing was driving her that she could win. Now, that's a little strong. I understand. But it happens. We are hypnotized. It could be something simpler, like, oh, I love strawberry cheesecake, and maybe I just stop by and pick up some cheesecake on the way home, and then it's just so delicious. I mean, I'm not going to do this all the time, but I go ahead and I eat half of it, and then the next day I eat the other half, and the next day I stop by and get some more. Now, I've known people that do this with ice cream. They bring home a half a gallon of ice cream, or maybe a pint, and they eat the whole thing. They have to have some more. Okay? That is, they're being hypnotized just by that person that was placing bets. Only now they're being hypnotized that ice cream can give you fulfillment if you get enough of it. And looking at the other side of the coin, what about the COVID-19 pandemic that we just all passed through? Now, I don't know how it was in your neck of the woods, but here in North Carolina, in the stores, people were awful. They were hoarding toilet paper. They were hoarding really any kind of paper products. You couldn't get them. I had a foster daughter that was working at the local grocery store, and fortunate for us, she was there when the truck came and delivered, so she could buy some for us. And I mean just a regular package. I'm not talking about 20 or 40 packages. She could buy some for us, and so we didn't run out. But it was something. And then there was the protest that everybody should wear a mask all the time. And then there was the change of thought that, well, you only need to wear it when you're going out, not when you're around the house. And so on and so forth. And everybody, we did pretty good in this part of the North Carolina. But sooner or later, that hypnotism makes its rounds. And it has just swept through this town. And a lot of people are going into the hospital. My granddaughter got COVID-19 and went to the hospital. She's fine now. But for a while there, they were going to stick her on a ventilator and told us to get her affairs in order, you know. But that was the hypnotism talking, wasn't it? Because she responded to our prayers, our meditations, and she said, they said, she's not going to need a ventilator and her breathing is improving. And so she came back to us from the hospital. But the point that I'm making is this mind is what we are stuck in. Now, I'm sure those people didn't mean to be hoarders. They were just afraid and feeling the fear produced by this hypnotism. All right, so he gives us an example of a chick in an egg. Imagine what goes on in a little chick's mind when it begins to catch a ray of light from outside of its shell. There is a something, he says, that eventually compels the chick to break open that shell and come outside and find a great big world in which to go looking for food and other chicks with which to play. In the first 6 hours that chick is out of the shell, it will find more new and interesting things than would a child at the foot of a Christmas tree. Is not the force of nature that pushes the chick out of its shell the same force that urges and pushes the unborn child forward out of its mother's womb? It, too, knows nothing of the great outside world, and all it learns from the moment of birth is gained from its parents, teachers, environment, and experience. Knowledge from these sources comes through conditioned minds. Well, he has just said that parents, teachers, environment, and experience are world mind. And these folks have conditioned minds. Now, what's a conditioned mind? Well, we just had a little bit of it. Person's afraid that they're going to run out of hand sanitizer. So they make a run to the market and they buy 20 bottles. Now there's only 24 on the shelf. And they stick those 20 in their basket and they run up to the front and they get rung up and they pay for them and they go home, and a whole lot of other people are going to be without hand sanitizer. And they'll, maybe the other people that bought it are walking around kind of smug. Well, that's a conditioned mind. The mind that's conditioned in this case by fear. I guess we all know, because we've watched movies on TV or at the movie theater, that, well, now of course we watch them on an iPod or an iPad or a notepad. And we have seen cases where people are obsessed with their partner, their spouse, their girlfriend or boyfriend. They're obsessed. And you know what that looks like from a movie. Maybe you've gone through it yourself. I don't know. But that's a conditioned mind. Okay, what about the person that has been in prison for a long time, and finally they're released, they're set free, and it's been 20 some odd years, and they walk out the front gate, I'm free, and they go and they get a room somewhere, and they start applying for work, and all of a sudden it hits them, they can't stand it out here, I've got to be back in the prison where there's structure, everything's at the same time every day. So they go out and pick a pocket or something, steal something, swipe something from a grocery store, and they're caught and sent back to prison, which is where they want to be because they are institutionalized. They're living with a conditioned mind. So he's saying here, knowledge from these sources, parents, teachers, environment, and experience, come through conditioned minds and enter a mind conditioned by these factors. That's what most of us do. All that most people know about what is going on in the world is known through the limitation of a conditioned mind. They are living a restricted and limited life. They do not know the limitless possibilities of their own being. I'll give you another one closer to my home, and then we'll quit that. My mother was afraid to drive. She did not drive a car, ever. We lived in Los Angeles, Pasadena, and so she took buses wherever she wanted to go. And even when we went, I can remember as a child, even when we went to Disney World or to the beach, we took buses and we had to get up early and get a transfer or two, and eventually we would get to where we're going. And then we had to reverse the process when we came home. So she would never drive. She was afraid to drive. I don't know why. I know her mother died in a car accident. So, my grandmother, but I never met her. But maybe that influenced her. I don't know. But that was definitely a conditioned mind. And guess what? My brother, my sister, they still won't drive. And I was in my 20s before I got a driver's license. A good friend of mine, Michael, he took me out in my car, which I owned, but I didn't have a license, and he took me out and we practiced a little bit. I think I scared him to death on the hill, but he stuck with me, and I got my driver's license, and I've been driving ever since, which is 50 years, I guess. Now, my sister and my brother still don't drive because my mother conditioned us. She wasn't trying to. She didn't set out to do it. I don't ever remember her saying, kids, don't drive, it's not safe. But it was just as natural as breathing. We took buses. Isn't that strange? But that's what happens. We get conditioned by conditioned minds. Most persons are on a treadmill, he says. They eat, drink, and sleep. They have families. They are living a life of limitation, locked up in their minds. In a few, something stirs inside the mind and makes them wonder, is there something beyond this that I know? Is there something beyond this that I am seeing with my eyes, or hearing with my ears, or thinking with my mind? I had these questions as a child. Let us, Joel says, take the blinkers off our eyes and really begin to see the trees, the plants, and other forms of life on this planet. Picture the vastness of the ocean stretching out to the horizon. Look up at some of the towering mountains of this world and see the world beyond the mountains, beyond the seas. And watch the moon shining on the ocean with its cool beauty, lighting up the mountains, showing us something of the vastness of the infinite. Observe the millions of stars up in the sky. I recently had a very unusual experience, and you might have too, I don't know. It was during an eclipse, a full eclipse. The moon covered the sun, and it was the strangest feeling. We went outside, and we saw shadows cast in a way that they'd never been cast before, and little tiny, like diamond shapes that were moving, and patterns in the sidewalk, things that we never saw before. I definitely got a feeling of being rather small in this body, in this universe. And yet, at the same time, I could feel that life is omnipresent. So, he says, once we begin to peck our way through the shell of the human mind and look outside, we find that all of this glory is there for you and for me. I can remember the first time I had that realization. What a wonderful God we serve. When we can look down on the panorama that stretches out before us and realize that God made this for our enjoyment, the wonder of this universe surges through us. Yes, that's exactly what it feels like, the wonder of this universe. When I went up to Herb Fitch's series of talks in Avila Beach in 1979, I was coming from my hotel room, walking down the little path to the outer building where he gave his talks, and I looked, and there was three deer bending over eating in the bushes in front of me, in the ivy or whatever it was. And they looked at me, and I looked at them, and I just marveled at the wondrousness of it. And then I went in and took my seat, and I told you what happened in there. To create a universe such as this must have taken the wisdom of an infinite intelligence, of a divine love. A great love, but a love for what or whom? It must have been a love for us, that all this has been given us to enjoy, not to own or possess, but to enjoy. To be grateful that there is a God, a something, a spirit, that has created this great universe and then set us down in it. I've had the experience many times when flying. I always get a window seat when I can. And I've had the experience many times of looking out that window and seeing the clouds beneath me, and then when they part, seeing the land down there, the earth, and it's like a quilt, all different colored squares and triangles, sometimes a circle. It's fabulous. Then you fly over the mountains, and there's no real pattern there. It's just nature gone wild. Or over the ocean, and you see white caps out in the middle of the ocean. Or over Hawaii, and you see what looks like real tiny islands, real tiny pieces of land stretched in a row. And then the next thing you know, you're landing on one of them. And when you get out, it looks like a big island. It didn't look like that when you were in the air. But the point is that it was made for us. And we keep thinking erroneously that this world is an illusion. Joel says plainly in the Infinite Way book, this world is not an illusion. It's this mind and this conditioning, that's the illusion. The conditioned mind is seeing the world that God made for you and for me to enjoy out of love. We're seeing that as a pandemic. We're seeing that as limitation. I've got to go gamble because I don't have enough money. We're seeing that as an obsession. I've got to have her. I've got to have him. They don't want us. They've got other attachments. There's nothing worse than that, being in love with someone and they couldn't care less about you. Well, there is something worse, but it's one of the obsessions that's not very pretty. All right, so if we compress ourselves inside our skull, and that's what we're doing, living in these conditioned minds, we have no more vision than the chick inside its shell. That is the limit of its world. And this skull will be the limit of our world. If we permit the petty little thoughts that crowd in upon us, the little room, the little town, or the big city where we live, to shut out the grandeur round about us. If we let these little foxes spoil the vines, we are unable to open our minds to an awareness of the divine qualities that exist throughout this world. You see? So, we have to break through the limitations of this mind that tries to tell us that there are only the people and the territory around us. When we stop this limited thinking, based only on what we know, we open ourselves to what God knows, the God that placed us here, and that placed all this here for us. And the God within us reveals that there is something beyond our immediate environment. There are people beyond, there are joys, glories, and experiences beyond this present one. It is not necessary to travel the world to experience this expansion of consciousness. Now see, the chick breaks out of the shell and experiences a new world. You and I break out of this skull, this conditioned mind, and experience an expansion of consciousness. Once we have opened our consciousness to the tremendous universe about us, it begins to come to us. It comes in books, in visitors, in new experiences, and it comes in interior revelations. This whole universe could be brought right to our doorstep. There is something that acts as a force to drive us to look out, look up, and look around. We would not do it, but something within us is nudging, pushing, and compelling us to look around until we become aware of this immensity all around us, of the beauty, harmony, joy, and companionship of the past, the present, and the future. Remember, future is an extension of now. All right, so something is pushing us. That's why I had to find out what was in these books called The Infinite Way. That's why I had to drive to Northern California and then fly over to Hawaii in order that I might listen to Herb Fitch and ask him questions. Simultaneously with this increased awareness comes introspection, leading to soul-searching questions. Why am I on Earth? Am I really living, or am I only existing from one day to another? Is my life just a round of going from home to office and from home to the marketplace? Does my life consist of going from one meal to the next, from one night's sleep to the next? Am I really living? Was I born to live in a tiny corner of the world? Or was this whole world created and given to me? Is not the earth mine, and not the heavens mine? Are we less than Abraham? And did not God say to him, "For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever"? The higher we rise in consciousness, the wider and broader will be our vision. Soon we will realize that we are not here. Now there you go, there's a cone for you. Soon we will realize that we are not here. We are not here, even on this limited piece of ground. We have broken through the limitations of the skull. We are no longer tied up inside of a skull bone. And we are not even limited to this body. We are I. We are out of the skull, out of the skull, on a mountaintop of vision. And we hear, all that you see is yours. See? Not with the eyes. All that we can apprehend, all that we can comprehend, all that we can discern, anything that we can envision is ours. This world was created for us. The whole earth, the times and the tides are ours. We are heirs to this universe, joint heirs. But what freedom comes when this is within us, this that is within us, forces us to go higher and higher in vision, breaking bit by bit out of the skull and more realizing the nature of our true identity as I, the offspring of God, the heir of God, joint heir. There are no limitations then to our inheritance, no limitations to our vision, no limitations to what we can possess. The whole earth is ours, and the sun, the moon, and the stars. Now he's trying to tell you what it's like when you live in an unconditioned mind. The natural man, the conditioned mind, receiveth not the things of God, neither can he know them, for they are spiritually discerned with that unconditioned mind. The vision through which we see is the vision that is given back to us. There is no limitation, and now we know that there is not even the limitation of time. We are not even limited to the century in which we live. So now he has you seeing that the universe, you are the universe, and the universe is in your consciousness, and now he has you seeing that you are timeless, eternal. You exist in every century, right now. We are not even limited to the century in which we live. There, too, is another example of how being locked up in those skull bones makes us believe that our life is being lived only in the 20th century. That is such a small part of our life. Our life really encompasses all the past and the present, and all of the future that we can climb high enough to envision. It is only if only we climb high enough in our spiritual vision, we can know this whole world for generations to come. It is all here to be seen. It is all here to be experienced. Nothing new is going to be created tomorrow, not a thing. All that was is now. All that will ever be is now. But we have to ascend to the mountaintop of vision to behold it. And we arrive at that mountaintop when we have broken through all limitations and know I am I, the Son of God, heir of God, joint heir to all the heavenly riches. Then we walk out on the street, by the sea, up the mountain, or go flying through the air with no sense of personal possession, just a sense of enjoyment of all that is because it is free. God has never put a price tag on time, space, or place. God has never put a price on mountains, lakes, and oceans. And it is only when we are locked up in this skull that we are bound by the limitations that the human mind has placed on such things. So come out, break through the limitations of your mind, and do not believe the signs that you see. Work more with yourself. Realize who you are. There is no more rewarding experience than to take a day off for walking where you can see mountains, lakes, or the sea. So he gives an example of a person that he worked with that he taught the best things in life are free. Only from the spiritual heights can we see that the earth is not matter. Now see, there he goes again. Now, a little while ago he said, we are not here. And now he says, the earth is not matter. But go out and look at it. Very strange, huh? I have an idea that he's seeing a different universe than we are. When you're in the spirit, all you can see is incorporeality. So then that should give you a clue that this universe is incorporeal. There's an incorporeal universe that is more beautiful than anything that your eye sees. When you step into your I am and look through its through your I Am's eyes, then you see the incorporeal creation. I can't explain it to you. It's an experience that you have to have yourself. But there is an incorporeal universe, and you can feel it. It almost has its own atmosphere. I used to talk to Herb about that. So, the Earth is not matter. And then he says, we do not live in time or space. We live in consciousness. When we go into meditation, we are not living in the mind with our thoughts. We are living in a receptivity to infinity. That is why we do not think our own thoughts in meditation. That is why we do not restrict ourselves to what we know. We do not just declare what we think or believe or what our concept is. When we turn within in meditation, it is to realize that the kingdom of God, the kingdom of this whole universe, is within. So our chest expands to include the whole of God's universe, and now we can look into that silence and darkness and experience His whole wisdom coming to us, His whole love, His whole life, His whole companionship flowing forth. Because now our consciousness is as big as the universe. It is holding the whole universe inside of it. We have to go beyond all that we know or think we know, all that we have learned or think we have learned. We have to go beyond that to the infinite unknown. And until we reach into that infinite unknown, we do not have the limitlessness of God's kingdom. Just as the great music, art, literature, and science must come through contact with the source, so must the secrets of the universe that are being unlocked to us today be tapped through contact with that same source. Why are these great things being revealed to us today? Are they not being revealed because man is an heir of God and entitled to all that the Father has? All the joy, all the abundance, all the infinity, all the life, all the love, and all the wisdom? Man is entitled to every bit of it, and it is being revealed unto him for his use, his joy, his beauty, that his life may be one of grace and peace. When this is understood, we can then take the next step and realize, I am that man. I am that being for whom all of this has been created. Yes, thank you, Father. To each of us will come whatever fulfills his nature. To me, the principles of mathematics and science will not come, because that would not fulfill my particular nature. To me come the secrets of the spiritual universe and of the soul of men who have lived throughout all the ages, because that fulfills me. God is infinite, and we are infinite being. There is an infinity of nature on earth, and each one of us has some part in that nature as which we are to be fulfilled. It is all here for us, and we are so great in God's eyes that He has stored it up for us, that we may know infinite and boundless good. And then in the psalm it says, when I consider the heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars, which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him? When I went to Hawaii to visit Herb, he took me for a walk. We walked along a famous golf course over there. And I remember asking him about World Mind. whether it was infinite. And he said, no, world mind's not infinite. It's just that wherever you are, world mind appears to be. And a few other things. And then in the evening, he took my wife and I out to a dinner show where they had hula hoops and girls dancing in those straw skirts. I don't know what they're called. And they had the band playing. And it was nice. It was wonderful. The food was good. The entertainment was good. The company was good. So according to Herb and what he did, and by the way, they paid for the dinner show. I was going to, but they said no, and they paid for it. So according to Herb and his actions, it's perfectly okay to go out and enjoy yourself at a dinner show or taking a walk along the beach. And so Joel finishes up with this. The greatest thing on earth is men and women. In them we find fulfillment. In them we find God's soul, full of life, full of love, full of joy, and full of peace. The whole of God is stored up in us, and all this world is really an instrument, a playground of joy. A place of inspiration made for our fulfillment. Now, that is chapter 30. And it gives me the feeling that if I will have a meditation and recognize that I'm not stuck in this skull bone, I'm not stuck in it. I'm not limited to it. And any of its conditioned thoughts, like I can't drive, is baloney. And other ones that I've also had to prove. My mother said, when you leave home, you'll find out that nobody really cares for you but your family. And that is a lie. There are 166 people in our group now, and the ones that I have gotten to know on a deeper level than just hello, I love them, and they love me. I can feel it, and sometimes they say it. And so if you have a meditation and recognize you're not stuck in these skull bones, that God made this universe, not just this planet, universe for you, then you can go out and enjoy it. Have a little moment where you feel that omnipresence, and then go out and enjoy it. Know that you're walking in that omnipresence that you just felt, and you're perfectly free to enjoy a... Well, we used to hike up to Big Sur. We would hike up into the mountains, 1 mile up, 5 miles back, and 1 mile down, and sleep in a hammock near the redwood trees and near a stream. It was beautiful. I loved it. Meditate up there. And so you're perfectly free to experience that and to know that you are walking in your own omnipresence. And if you know that, I guarantee you, if you have to take buses, like my mom did, and you find yourself in a not-so-good part of town, you... by knowing that you're walking in your consciousness, will make friends even there. People will want to help you. They'll feel something. What will they feel? They'll feel their selves. You and I are not we, but one. All right. Now, I want to read this again. This is the book of John, the first epistle of John, chapter 1. Here's a fellow that is feeling his own omnipresence, and you can tell. Listen to what he says. If you have spiritual discernment, you can tell. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked upon, and our hands have handled, of the word of life. For the life was manifested, and we have seen it, and bear witness, and show unto you that eternal life, which was with the Father, and was manifested unto us. There's a fellow that is living in his own omnipresence. That which we have seen and heard, declare we unto you, that ye also may have fellowship with us. And truly, our fellowship is with the Father, and with His Son, Jesus Christ. All right, so if you are able to break out of these skull bones in your meditation, and you're able to get a glimpse and a feeling of omnipresence, then, like John, you will be able to say, I have seen it, I have felt it, I have touched it, I have heard the word. Now, again, those of you who think that this world is an illusion and you shouldn't even bother with it, you are mistaken. It's not the world that's the illusion, it's the skull bones that is seeing the world falsely. In the very beginning of the Infinite Way book, Putting on Immortality, Joel says this: In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word was made flesh. It manifested. The Word was made flesh, but it still is the Word. In other words, omnipresence is manifested as this universe, but it is still omnipresence. By being made flesh, it does not change its nature, character, or substance. Cause becomes visible as effect. But the essence or substance is still the Word or Spirit or consciousness. In this way do we understand that there is not a spiritual universe and a material world, but rather what appears as a material world is the Word made flesh or Spirit made visible or consciousness expressed as idea. All the error down through the ages is founded on the theory of two worlds, one a material world and the other a heavenly kingdom. So, he says, let us, then, begin with the understanding that our world is not an erroneous one, but rather that the universe in which we live is the realm of reality, about which we entertain a false concept. So the work of bringing health and harmony into our experience is not getting rid of or changing a mortal material universe. The work is in correcting the finite concept in the skull bones. All right, so he says further down here, eventually we are led to the great revelation Mortals only put on immortality as mortality disappears. They do not add immortal spiritual harmony to human conditions. God does not create, nor does he control material affairs. Why? Because there aren't any. Now, if we had the consciousness that Christ Jesus had, we could look out and see what looks like a material world, but we would sense our own omnipresence, wouldn't we? And so when a fellow came up to us and said, "Sir, will you come with me? My son is sick unto dying." We could say, like Christ Jesus, we could say, "Go your way, your son liveth." Because we would not be looking at the concept that the fellow had in his mind. We would be looking at omnipresence. And when someone else walked up to us and said, "Will you heal me? I have leprosy," and their face was all swollen and strips of skin were hanging off of it, that person has a concept of a horrible condition. They're locked up in the skull bones, Joel calls them. What did Jesus do? He touched the side of his face. He felt his own omnipresence, and he touched him, and he was healed. The leprosy disappeared because it was a concept, not a reality. And this is what we have to get into our consciousness. Concepts are not reality. They're concepts. Joel's example he uses over and over is you come into a house. You're visiting your friend, and the friend says, "Oh, come on up here. I want to show you something up in the attic." So you walk the steps up into the attic, the stairs, and you poke your head in there, and you look. Your friend's over there on the right side, but over on the left side, you just saw some movement. It looks like, "Oh my God, it's a ghost." And you get ready to hightail it out of there, and your friend says, whoa, come on up. There's nothing up here." And you say, "Well, I just saw something over there." And your friend says, "That's okay. It's just a sheet. I threw a sheet over a chair because I wanted to keep the dust off of it. But I saw it move." "No, what you saw is there's a fan in the attic here. And when the blade turns around, it casts a shadow, and the shadow moves. So you see, there is no ghost. It was only a false concept." Then you can walk up there, and you know everything's okay. Well, it's the same with any other concept. You have a concept of allergies, let's say. And right now they're really, what's the word I'm looking for? Really aggravating you. But you know, if you knew in your meditation that you weren't dealing with allergies, you were dealing with concepts in the mind, false concepts, then you would be able to say, "Oh, there's no power in that. What a silly idea." And the next thing you know, you would be walking around just perfectly fine. I was taught that I needed to go to school, get a degree, get a good job, get a good salary. All this getting. And so I tried to do it. And I did it. I got 3 degrees, and I went out and conquered the world. No, I went out and I made some good money. $50 an hour, I think it was. And but you know what? The job required me to work 60-hour weeks. That's like a week and a half. And I worked them. Thanksgiving came and went. Christmas came and went. New Year's came and went. And I realized I was married to the job. I did not enjoy any of those holidays. The only day that we were closed was Christmas Day, and the rest of the time we're open. And some of the times at night, in the middle of the night, the police would call and say one of your alarms went off, and I'd have to go drive to the building and go inside and turn the alarm off and see what, you know, if anybody had broke in. And more often than not, it was probably just a mouse, because there was nobody there. Well, I didn't like that. So eventually I quit. I had nothing lined up, but I quit. And I've told you this story before. My spiritual advisor said, well, he didn't say anything in the beginning because I didn't call him. But when I couldn't get a job, I was still getting. When I couldn't get a job, and I had been to several interviews, and they were nice interviews. The people liked me. I liked them. But then came the end of the interview when they said, we can't afford to pay you what you've been making. And I said, that's okay. I just want to work. And they said, okay. Well, we'll call you. And they never did. None of them. Because they couldn't afford to pay me what I had been making. Because I had received several reviews while I was working, and they were good ones, so I got raises. And now they're telling me, we can't afford to pay you what you've been making, and I can't find a job. And I have my bills. I have rent on the house I'm living in, that my wife and our son and I are living in. And I think it was at the time, this is a long time ago, I think it was $500-$600 a month. And oop, I better get that. I'll be right back. Ah, that was my wife Madeline wanting to know what I want, because she's at Arby's. And I said, give me some of those poppers if they've got them. Those jalapeno poppers. Anyway, where was I? Well, I started to get worried. I wasn't going to find a job. So I called my spiritual advisor. I told him what had happened, and that I had been laid off, and now I couldn't find any work, and nobody wanted to pay me what I'd been making. And he said, you're looking at this wrong. That's what spiritual advisors do. They tell you, you're looking at this wrong. What do you mean? He said, you're not supposed to go out to get a job. I'm not? No. He said, you're supposed to go out to help people do things they need to have done, and then God will take care of you. Oh. All right. All right. I'll try it. So I hung up the phone, and the next day I had an interview with the plant manager at a factory that made automatic wire strippers. And it got to be an hour before my interview, and I thought, well, I better get up and shave, put on my nice Dockers and shirt, and just, I don't know why I did it, but I stopped myself right in the middle, and I said, wait a minute. Now, if this principle works, then it works no matter what I look like. So I didn't shave. I didn't shave. I had old jeans on with paint stains on them from painting the house. I had an old shirt. And that's the way I went to the interview. I get kind of smart ugly sometime with God, you know. I'm fine, if this works, show me. So I went down there, and the plant manager, he was a Mormon. Very clean, very neat. And he said, well, tell me about yourself. And I said, well, I'm here to help you do things you need to have done. And that's it. And you know what happened? He was so comfortable because I wasn't putting on any airs that he started sharing himself. And pretty soon he's telling me some story about how he broke his toe and we're laughing and having a good time. And then he said, can you start on Monday? And I said, yes. And I did. And I was there a year or two. But anyway, the point is, well, I had to call my spiritual advisor back and say, you were right. You were right. When I went with the proper motivation, everything was wonderful. And it isn't to get, it's to give. How can I be of service? Now, I've told this story to people, and they don't believe it. One guy pounded on the table, God never got me a job. And I wanted to say, because you never let him. Okay, so how does that relate to what we're talking about? It relates to it because we don't want to be stuck in our skull bones that say, I can't get a job, and I'm limited and lacking. We want to step out of that into a new universe that says you can have what you need as long as you're helping others get what they need. You see? I make these talks. I know you listen to them and a lot of other people around the world. And I'm helping maybe for just an hour to take you out of the limited skull bones, as Joel calls them, and lift you up for a little while so that you can step outside and see the beauty of the universe that God created for you. Well, we're out of time again. I love you. I will be meditating from 11 to 11:15 on Sunday. And I'll go ahead and put this talk up now so that you have it. And I'll make an announcement Sunday that it's been put up. And in the meantime, if you wander over there and accidentally find it, good for you. Good for you. All right. Thank you so much.